Gene editing is an exciting technique that opens the door to new approaches for gene therapy, manipulating genes in the body to treat disease, either by fixing a defective gene or by adding in a functional copy of a broken gene. To find out more about the latest progress in gene therapy, I spoke with Michael Linden, a former professor of virology who left academic research to become vice president of gene therapy at the pharmaceutical company Pfizer.
There are many rare diseases out there, 6,000 to 8,000 rare diseases, some of which have been very well characterized. And the characteristic of many of these diseases is single gene defects. What that means is that a gene has a wrong instruction, in essence, making a product that is either wrong or not making a product that a cell needs, and therefore we get sick. And what gene therapy is trying to do is to replace that function.
So we know that our genes are made of DNA. That's the instructions our cells use. But you can't just like stick DNA in people or feed DNA to people. How do you get these fixed or these well genes into people and into the right places in people?
So what we do here is we really look back into nature, and we look there, what we find is a concept that does exactly that. And their concept is called viruses. So viruses don't do anything but deliver their genetic material to the respective hosts, for example, to us, and then replicate there. What we're now doing is we're taking these viruses and changing them. We're changing them. We're taking out the ability that they can amplify themselves and hurt us, for example, and we're replacing the genetic material that the virus otherwise would have brought to our tissues by therapeutic DNA.
And what sort of viruses are these? Because there are lots and lots of viruses that infect humans. You know, there's everything from HIV through to, you know, herpes viruses and all sorts of things. What are the viruses that gene therapists like to use?
Yeah, what you've just done is you've described pretty much the early stages of gene therapy development, because every single virus that we had some idea about were explored for the possibility of delivering genes to humans. Currently, the front runners in gene delivery are viruses, for example, adeno-associated virus, which clearly is a human virus, a non-pathogenic human virus. What that means is even the wild-type virus doesn't make us sick.
So we just catch it and nothing happens.
We just catch it, nothing happens, until we're infected by a nastier virus, for example, herpes or adenovirus, and then AAV, adeno-associated virus, starts replicating and killing these cells. So for us, potentially even a protective virus. So we're taking that virus and we change the genome to contain whatever therapeutic gene we need, and then manufacture these recombinant viruses as ultimately as drug product.
I guess the big challenge is you've got this virus, it's loaded with the gene that you want someone's cells to make. What are the big challenges there? I mean, I guess it's kind of hard if you want to manipulate every cell in someone's body. How do you get enough of the virus into the right place?
Yeah, so that's a very good question, because that's one of the challenges that gene therapy faces. And that's really, you know, the result of many years of research, which have shown us that, for example, adeno-associated virus can be modified. It can be modified to infect particular cells or particular organs more efficiently. And what that does is, in essence, it gives us a panel of viral vectors based on this one system that has preferential targeting efficiency, so we can generate viruses that are very well at infecting the CNS, the central nervous system, or viruses that are good at infecting the liver, for example. And we have now a choice of many where we can really use the behavior of these recombinant viruses and design our approach around those.
Where are the kind of the best or the most interesting approaches for really making this work in practice?
Yeah, I think, you know, my pragmatic view of this is that we really have to start with simple concepts, and one of the examples is, for example, hemophilia B, where Pfizer has an involvement, and really what that is, it's a single protein that's not functioning well, that's not functioning at all, in fact, which leads to the bleeding deficiency of these hemophilia patients. Now, what a simple gene therapy does in this case is the factor 9 gene that's deficient in the hemophilia B is being put into an AAV vector and really systemically delivered to the liver. And what that then does is it makes the liver to become a protein factory. It reads the DNA, the DNA instructions, it generates the protein, the factor 9 protein, and secretes it back into the blood circulation, which then allows the patients to have normal clotting behavior, which in essence means the disease can be cured.
And my two really big questions about this are, A, is it safe? And then B, how much will it cost? And we'll take those one at a time, because I do remember from some time ago, there was a very famous case of a gene therapy that was tried, and the person undergoing the therapy actually died. And it did raise a lot of questions about, is this safe? Should we be doing this? So let's tackle that first. You know, what has come on since then to make these therapies safer?
Yes, so Jesse Gelsinger died in 1999 as a result of an immune response to the viral vector that was used at that point, which was based on adenovirus. Adenovirus is actually a very immunogenic virus.
It's kind of nasty stuff.
Yes, exactly. And also it causes a strong immune response, which really hadn't been recognized at that point. But what I have to say that in the past almost 20 years since that, we've learned an awful lot. A lot of work has been done around the safety of these vectors. We now have parameters where we can measure what the response to the delivery vehicle will be and anticipate really setting the stage for a really safe trial. And as you know, clinical trials are really, a large part of the clinical trials are driven by one concern and one concern only, and that is safety.
And then there's the cost. Yeah. And I know that some clinical trials have happened to test things like gene therapy in the eyes, trying to restore sight. You're talking about the clinical trials in haemophilia. There are trials undergoing in cystic fibrosis. And we hear about things like there's basically a gene-based medicine for muscular dystrophy. And these things seem to cost so much money. Is this really a viable approach for the future?
So you're talking to a scientist, and I think it would be really unwise for you to ask me about costing of these, very complex, which is a very complex issue. All I can tell you is that I know that gifted people are currently considering exactly what impact costing has and so on and so forth. All I know is really the science behind it. And what I can tell you is that I think what we're trying to do is more complex than just a cost for one drug. What we're trying to do is a novel approach, which in essence can, for a long time, or ultimately maybe forever, modify a disease. And if it's forever, you call that cure a disease. And these are concepts that are novel, which is why a lot of government agency, pharmaceutical companies and so on are really now sitting down and trying to figure this out. What is the medical, what is the health consequence for these type of treatments? And they can be vast, in fact, because many of the diseases that we're looking at, they're not treatable by other methods. And, at some point, somebody will really figure out what is a reasonable cost in this really novel space.
That's Michael Linden speaking to me at the British Science Festival in Swansea last year.